something. I have a pleasure to be with you. I have a pleasure to drink vodka since early morning with Professor Seroussi, Professor Bahat, and they are working, very working so hard. Thank you so much. So, fortunately and unfortunate at the same time, we have a privilege and honor and a pleasure to meet Professor Seroussi this week and I suppose this month last time. We'll see the future is like a gate of heaven open for us, or maybe closed, but we'll knock at it all the time. So Professor Seroussi decided to dedicate his third lecture to the, as you can see, the Polish contribution to the Israeli music. Because honestly speaking, I remember I was told many, many, many years ago when I came first time, and Dan, please correct me if I'm wrong, when I came to Israel, that the first language in the Knesset and the first language in the army, and basically the language it could be listened in Tel Aviv especially, but you know, all Israel, it was Polish, of course Polish. So, and by the way, I only want to take advantage and say one word. When I met Professor Dan Bahat a few years ago, he said to me something which is a key to understand the history of Jewish people. He said, there are only Polish Jews. There are no Lithuanian Jews, there is no the Ukrainian Jews, there is no the other Jews. The only Polish Jews exist. Nachon? Nachon. So the Polish Jew called a greater Galicianer, Professor Edwin Seroussi. It's a great, great pleasure.
Tada. Thank you very much, Janusz, once again for all what you have done. Really, it's just amazing. This man is amazing. You could. He's very humble, too. So, we used two methodologies to approach a little bit the music of Israel. The first session, we gave a very broad overview of the entire culture through the songs of children. Yesterday, we tried to understand Israeli musical culture through one song. So today, we are going to do that through one person. These are three different methodologies that you can go by and try to understand the whole out of its parts, its components. And when we talk with Janusz, tell me, Edwin, 100 years of the Polish Republic, I thought, okay, what can I do? I could find Polish elements or quotations in Israeli songs, etc. But then I remember Moshe Wilensky. What can be more Polish than this composer? And so today we're going to be about an hour and 10 minutes with Moshe Wilensky, whom I had the privilege to meet in person in the last year of his life. So some of the information I'm providing you is based on the interviews I did with him at his home in Tel Aviv in 1996. Secondly, I want to tell you that I convinced Moshe on that time to give his legacy, his archive, to the National Library. He had all these materials in a closet. He opened this closet and he had all the scores, all the program notes, all the material, amazingly. Very well arranged, true Warshaver Jew, very, very precise. However, he told me, you know, I love Tel Aviv, I will give this to the city of Tel Aviv. And he said, Moshe, don't give that to the city of Tel Aviv. The city of Tel Aviv couldn't care less about heritage and about memory. Give it to the National Library in Jerusalem. And that's what he did. And thanks to that, we have all his documents. You're going to see a few of them. All his notes, all his letters, all his contracts, okay, in the National Library. It's a wealth of materials that has been hardly touched by researchers. I hope our students will do more. So, Moshe is a composer, or was a composer, pianist, an arranger. And again, if I had to quote one musician who had an almost 55 years of career, composed over 1,500 songs, and that many of them are still performed, sung, beloved by many generations of Israelis, this is the man. There are many composers, other composers and performers, etc., but this is the man, and you will see why. So he worked in every possible position in Israel. You will see that very soon. He was everywhere, in several levels of the musical life. And he composed music in every style and genre that you can imagine. He was also an orchestra conductor, not conduction like written here, I'm sorry, and a fabulous arranger. He was one of the most important artists contributing to the army ensembles. If you remember, in my first lecture, I mentioned that the army entertaining ensembles were very important in the constitution of Israeli popular music, particularly in the 50s and 60s. He composed music for the theater, for the vaudeville, children's songs. So, I told you every Israeli composer wrote songs for children, so did Moshe. Composed music for film, for state ceremonies. He also helped people who didn't know music well enough. He wrote their songs. They used to sing that to him, he used to write them down and then arrange that for them. So he did everything. Born in 1910 in Warsaw, so the first 22 years, which in my opinion are decisive in his career, he spent in Warsaw. Now, regretfully, that's the period about which we know the least. There is not that much documentation. Probably at the time when he came to Israel, was the British Palestine, he didn't bring a lot of papers. In Warsaw, this is very interesting, his mentor was the composer and educator Yitzhak Edel, another Warsaw-born Jewish musician. So we have now two generations of musicians. And Edel taught mostly at the Janusz Korczak orphanage. And Moshe told us he was my main teacher of music, from which I gather that Moshe may have studied with him in the school of Korczak, but I don't have any document to establish that. And Edel was important in establishing the Jewish Music Society in Warsaw before the war, and he moved to Palestine in 1929, where he became one of the most important pedagogues of music in Tel Aviv and educators of music teachers in Tel Aviv. Wilensky also studies at the Warsaw Royal Conservatory. Then it was called the Royal Conservatory. Today is the Frédéric Chopin University of Music. And this is the building where Moshe probably studied from the age of 18 to the age of 22. This is one of the few pictures we have, a nice Polish Jewish boy from Warsaw. By the way, a great pianist too. So when he arrives to British Palestine, his main venue of activities is the vaudeville, the theater, and the coffee houses. Now, once again, I go back to what I said 2 days ago. Usually the image of Israeli culture, Israeli music, is kibbutzim, agriculture, pioneering, etc. Not cafes and vaudevilles and theater. But that was the thing in the new city of Tel Aviv and Haifa and even Jerusalem. So all these venues provided a lot of work for musicians. And Moshe, when he arrived in 1932 with his qualifications already as a graduate from the conservatorium in Warsaw, was immediately absorbed. He didn't have to look for a job. He didn't have to go to pave the roads in the Galilee or to work in agriculture. He immediately got professional commitments to write, arrange music, compose, direct for all these different venues. And this is a very important chapter in Israeli culture, because many of the songs that he composed for these venues, which are not very heroic, to say the least, but are very cosmopolitan, became today one of the most cherished Israeli musical heritage. So that's what's important. Some of the venues were very well known. I just pick a couple of them. The Yarkon Hotel in the 1940s particularly, many of these venues, my friends, were the clients were the British officers of the mandate and the elites of Tel Aviv. So we have this mingling. Another very famous place where Moshe was very active was Cafe Noga in Tel Aviv, which opens, as you can see, in 1941. And you see Bela and his six rhythm players. Tel Aviv, very cosmopolitan city, okay? Very rich in its musical life. He immediately became one of the main figures in the Musicians Union. Here you can see his ID from the union. However, one of the most important venues in these years, we are talking about the 30s, 40s, and 50s, is the theater, particularly the satirical theater. These Jews in Tel Aviv, particularly Polish Jews and Hungarian Jews, were very sharp-minded in their criticism of the new society. Okay, they had no reservations and to criticizing the leadership. They were not yes-sayers, but they were critical. And they criticized a lot through satirical theater, which is fascinating. You can also see in the poster the influence of modernistic aesthetics into these groups. This goes together with the Bauhaus architecture in Tel Aviv. This is all part of a state of mind of culture which has visual and also sonorous connotations. So you see the picture of the Matete Theater. Let's start now with songs, because I have spoken too much. You know me, I don't speak too much, I play music. So I pick up one of the most famous songs of the Matete Theater in its early years. This is a song that Moshe composed, slashed, arranged, slashed, designed for the Matete Theater in 1933. To a text by a very important poet of the time, Emmanuel Arussi. Now, what he did here, and this is what is interesting, is that he took parts of a Hasidic Nigun, a very, very old piece of Jewish music, and turned that into a refrain of the song. This melody eventually served a tremendous amount of other texts. It has Yiddish versions, and it has also religious Hebrew versions, and we'll play you a couple of examples of that. In fact, the song is a parody of a parody. It's a parody of the Yiddish theater, in a way, a Hebrewistic parody of the traditional Yiddish theater of Romania and of Poland and of New York, of course. And eventually, one of the covers is Golda Gidi Lanuken from the 1960s. So this is the song. We are going to play something which is very close to the original version. Now, the song is very, it's not very sophisticated song. It says Doda, which means auntie, okay? Or in Yiddish, you will say Maideli. Okay, Maideli, tell me yes. Okay, we all want to get married. We cannot suffer anymore. You are our happiness. Maideli, say us yes. And then every stanza describes one of the pretenders. Okay, so the first one is a big contractor, a bonnet, a big contractor. He has a lot of money in the bank. The second one is a owner of orange groves, etc., etc. Doda Agidi Lanuke. No.
אנו רוצים להתחתן לא נוכל יותר לסבול את אושרנו את הכל דודה, אגידי לנו כן אחד הוא איש רב מרץ קונה הוא את הארץ וסכום בבנק לגמרי לא קטן, קטן, קטן שני פרדס וקרם אישה נסע לו תרם אגידי נאי גם זה חתן, קטן, קטן, קטן לנו כן אנו רוצים להתחתן לא נוכל יותר לזמול את אושרנו את הכל דודה, הגידי לנו כן שלישי הוא איש רב חסד גבאי בבית הכנסת שלישי הוא מפטיר גם כן לא יפסר, שר, שר והרביעי נאיבי סימפטי תל אביבי נוהג בדרך ארץ ומוסר, שר, שר, שר דודה, הגידי לנו כן אנו רוצים להתחתן לא נוכל יותר לזמול את אושרנו את הכל דודה, הגידי לנו כן לסבול את אושרנו את הכל דודה הגידי לנו כן
So here you have this hybrid product. You have the chansonnier, a little bit like Maurice Chevalier or like Timon Rexite in America. The accompaniment, swingy, okay, a little bit, perhaps even of New Orleans jazz there. Moshe told us, when I was in Warsaw, I played jazz. Now, I was thinking, what is jazz in Warsaw in 1928, 29? He was a student at the conservatory, and on the side, he plays in the cafes of Warsaw. So he already has this craft of how to make this type of music, how to compose it. And this aesthetics is the aesthetics of the musical theater, which partly is shared with the Yiddish theater. So you see that the Yiddish and Hebrew cultures are not so far away, and sometimes they speak with the same melody in different directions. Let me play you, by the way, this was Josef Golland, I'm sorry, which was, Josef Golland was the chansonnier, the crooner of the Hebrew scene. He sings with a very heavy Ashkenazi accent too, so sometimes if you go far away from the speakers, you may think he's singing Yiddish. So I want to reinforce this because usually the Yiddish and the Hebrew cultures are presented as two separate venues and not always work that way. Let me play you the same song as this is also a very important part of Israeli culture. This is the Hasidic version of the same song with a very important verse from the Bible, Utsu Etzav Etufar. And this song became, after 1967, one of the main songs of the settlers' movement. So you see, this is the Chabad version. I'm sorry, I'm cutting, as usual. But I brought this example just once again to emphasize that not only the distance between Hebrew and Yiddish culture is not as dramatic as sometimes is presented, also the separation between the secular and the religious spheres are not always, at least musically speaking, so far apart as we tend to present them. Tango. I cannot go with any class I give without talking about tango. And you see that I wrote that the genre originated in Uruguay and Argentina, because the Argentinians always say that they invented tango. And this is part of why the Argentinians are annoying. So The tango is really, from my point of view, is the first global genre of music. The music started in Buenos Aires and Montevideo in the late 19th century, early 20th century. And its way through Europe, through Paris, in the first decade of the 20th century, and then into Poland and into Bulgaria and into Turkey and into Egypt is just amazing. So Moishe comes from Warsaw, he already know what tango is. There are many Yiddish tangos composed in Warsaw at the time, and he composes this tango, Elimelech, which was written for the Matate Purim party. The theater used to throw a big party in Tel Aviv on Purim. This used to be the party of the town, and they used to rent one of the big halls, and they used to perform for the people and write new songs. So what is important about this tango, not only is one of the first schlagers of Vilensky, but is a tango with an orientalistic touch. I will play and you will understand what I'm talking. We're going to see two versions. This is almost the original version, was recorded around 1945 by the original singers who perform it. So it's an historical recording.
Ha-e-no-ha-ha-ina-ha-ma-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-
The text is about this, how do you say, Birion, this tough guy, Elimelech. He is the king of Nevet Tzedek. Nevet Tzedek is the oldest part of Tel Aviv. And when he goes through the streets, all the hearts of the ladies are broken. And he goes like a swan. Okay, he goes like a swan. He has a casket on his eyes and mastic veshinav, that is to say, chewing gum between his teeth. And the lady says, I am so proud that among 100 girls, he chose me to be the girlfriend. He's not a humble boy. He said, you should be proud that I elected you. That's more or less what they said. Let me get off this show you a revival of the song in the 1970s. It's important that the memory of Vilensky, this song was composed for a party in 1935. It could have died that very same day. But it lives until this very day, and it's all the time reinterpreted, sometimes with the little new works by younger artists. So,
Barbur hollehu, al hatzibur mollehu, kasket lo aleinav, ummastik veshinav.
Ya ani gea, ben banot mea, mi bachar lo lereva.
Hitgai Miriam, yesh lach osher ya, ze li melech hamushlam.
Again, I apologize. I know you like it. It's very beautiful. But we should back to work. The issue is that Vilensky's songs remain forever in the Israeli repertoire. These are Yona Atari and Ili Gorlitsky. Why I'm playing this also? Because Yona Atari is from a Yemenite family. And the previous singer, the woman, she's also from a Yemenite family. The Yemenites are going to come back, you will see, very soon. The Yemenite craze of the 30s and 40s. Vilensky defined himself when we talk to you. They say, they call me the Yemenite from Warsaw. The day he arrived to Tel Aviv, the first thing he found were Yemenite Jews, and since then, the rest is history. He used to go to Yemenite synagogues just to listen to the sound, but particularly what drove him and many other Polish Jews crazy were the Yemenite girls. Now, the Yemenite craze is part of the Eastern European perception of the Yemenite Jew as the ultimate Jewish other. This perception combines a deep admiration of the Yemenite as a primordial Jew. What mean primordial Jew? The authentic Jew, the Jew that was from Second Temple time to today never changed. He's the authentic Jew on the one hand. On the other hand, the disdain for the uncivilized. So the Yemenite Jew is also the barbarian Jew. So these two elements combine into this prototype or stereotype. And in every program of the Matate, and the Matate was the theater, the satirical theater was active for almost 30 years, there is a Yemenite. And who is the Yemenite? The street cleaner, the one who served the tea in the office, and in many cases is a piano mover. So it's a people that just move pianos. So on the other hand, the young Yemenite Jewish divas who were mostly already born in Israel or educated in Israel. Vilensky became enamored with these singers, and the number one, his favorite, you will see her in a minute, is Shoshana Damari. By the way, Shoshana and Moshe toured the United States for fundraising immediately after the establishment of Israel. They were in New York. Shoshana Damari appeared in the village in New York, and everybody was crazy by these Yemenite women, also in New York. The interest on the Yemenite Jewish culture is profound, particularly on the music. So the Yemenite songs were collected and was published. Here you have one of the most seminal, important books of songs, Yemenite songs, recorded from Yemenite Jews and printed with musical notation. Here you see Shoshana Damari, and here you have the big trio, Nathan Alterman, the great poet. He's the poet who wrote Elimelech, and he was the main poet for the Matate Theater. So his collaboration with Vilensky is seminal to Israeli culture. And Shoshana, and look at the way he's looking at her. Here they are in the beach. By the way, he was already married to Berta here. Berta was a nice woman, the wife, and she was there, but I don't want to go into details. And this is the crooner you heard before, okay? So Vilensky wrote, throughout the years for the Matate, many Yemenite songs. What is a Yemenite song? It's a song about Yemenites. It's not necessarily musically Yemenite, but it was put in the mouth of the actors who represented the Yemenite figures in the theater. And here you have one of the most well-known, again, Alterman. The song is Miriam Bat Nisim. We will hear that, and I will translate for you later on. But the song basically celebrates the massive immigration of Yemenite Jews to Israel around 1951-52. This is important to know. Yemenite Jews came to Israel from the very beginning of the Zionist settlement, from 1882. So when Vilensky arrived to Tel Aviv, there was a generation of Yemenite Jews who were already established in British Palestine. But the majority of the Yemenite Jews came after the establishment of the state. So we have different generations of Yemenite Jews. I don't have time to enter into that. It's a very interesting subject, how the newcomers perceived the old Yemenites who were already living all around Israel. But the song celebrates this immigration. And let's hear it. You can see also a couple of pictures in the video.
هيا بعاد من الخيرة روح الحيمان بل المحار اتفلان نقيت في لخدير بيا تانو قول هم مش بحا اتخبي تبتر من سررنو بشابنو ماي من هبير وبشورا كلانو استدارنو وبطريق زئد سفارنو ام كلانو يشكو ميحاسير mi hazer mi hazer mi hazer yesh amor in sim ye rahim shem yesh nisima em ye rahim shem yesh nahim ya gal ya sar ya ve azan ya salim saad ya mi khol hananan ya ye ruham ve rahamim baruch hashem teomim vat nok shalom hat tohet ba halom va ani ahodo miryam והחמור הקטן בלעם החמור הקטן בלעם.
Here you see the photo of Yemenite immigrants arriving, and the song basically says we left the port of Aden in Yemen. That's where all the immigrants came through this port out from Yemen, and we put a pita, which is something that you know, piece of bread on our back, that's all what we had, and we came. And then she starts speaking about the entire family. Of course, this is a little bit of a parody. The family has like 14 children, and she mentions very, very fast all the name of the children. Say Baruch Hashem, blessed be God, more children, and all the names are in the second part. Well, I will just play the rest of the song. And she's Miriam Bat Nisim, so she's the youngest one. And all the time the parents are counting the children if someone is missing, okay? So you can imagine the scene. Then there is a scene in Tel Aviv where the traffic cop has to stop for half an hour the traffic so that all the family can come through it. So it's a little bit, if you read that, it's a little bit politically incorrect today, but human beings were all the time politically incorrect until now.
שוטר מרים ידו בשקט והתנועה לחצי שעה נפסקת כי עוברים אנחנו את הכביש ועוברים 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 עובר לו מורי נסים בעזרת השם רב נסימה האם בעזרת השם עוברים נחם יגדליה שריה ועזניה סלם סעד ימי חול חנן ענניה יחיה רוחם ורחמים ברוך השם תאומים והתינוק הלום הצוחק בחלום ואני אחותו מרים והחמור הקטן בלעם החמור הקטן בלעם.
They also have a little donkey in this family that comes with them, and he's called Bilam. We won't go into that.
I'm sorry, because it is translated, and translators cannot hear your questions. So keep your question for the end, and then you will be translated also.
Yes. Okay.
I'm sorry, and thank you.
You see, a lot of the Yemenite-ness of this song is her accent, the way she sings, the way she pronounces the Hebrew, but also pay attention to Moshe's orchestration, a master of orchestration of the highest professional level in the world. Imaginative, artistic, using all the symphony orchestra, usually in small ensembles, but with an amazing technique that should be pointed out. Now, the IDF ensembles. In the 1950s, after the establishment of the State of Israel, as I said, the Israeli army is able to recruit the best artists of the country at the age of 18, when they are young. And then you get the best artists for 3 years that you can rehearse with them day and night. That's no impresario can have that opportunity. So Moshe is recruited to military service too, and he became one of the main contributors also to the high quality of these ensembles. These ensembles are also like a conservatory, like a university for the growing of the best artists of the highest level of Israeli popular music. And one of the most iconic of the songs, he writes tens of songs for all the ensembles every year. Every year, each of this group presents a program, and then the program runs through all the camps in the country. So we have here the very famous song, Mul Har Sinai, Fencing Mount Sinai. And this is a song by Yechiel Moar, another important poet. All the most important poets of Israel work with Vilensky, all of them. And the song celebrates the victory of Israel in the Sinai victory. I don't know to call that a victory, but a very successful military Sinai campaign 1956. And the text is heavily biblical, with many biblical quotations comparing the experience or the awe of the soldiers facing Mount Sinai, like the people of Israel standing in Sinai to receive the Torah. What is the song? I forgot to put it there, but don't worry. It's somewhere here. I want you to hear the song because it's important. So you see, the style of this song is totally different from what we just played until now. This is, the arrangement adds a little bit to its military flavor, but this is the closest Vilensky wrote to what is considered as the traditional Israeli song type, based mostly in the ora type of song. Okay, that's the type of songs that is most identified with Israel. So he could compose at the same time a tango, a ballad like Maurice Chevalier, and also a military song, okay, or a song of bravery. He's comparing really here the like we return to Mount Sinai after 3,000 years, okay, and this is. A very special song that is sung until this very day. We have to move fast. I want to show you another aspect. Many of the graduates of the army in the 1960s and 70s, they composed, they established civil ensembles based on the army ensemble. So the same aesthetics now move into the civilian sphere, and they are very successful, and this is where most of the Israeli pop stars emerge from this group. Here you have another important poet and good friend of mine, Dan Almagor, and this is a song. You can see now the humor of Vilensky. He could write anything, so he could write Latin American music too. But the song is, I see this as an orientalistic type of song towards us, towards the Latin American, talking about the banana republics and about coconuts and about all what you can imagine. It's a little bit absurd, but just listen to the marvelous music of Moshe Vilensky. Okay. Even if you don't understand Hebrew, you could understand the song. It's a very silly song in a way, but it shows us Vilensky in its humorous mode, and also with this parody of Latin American music. Of course, it's a parody. Back to Poland. 1962, believe it or not, Vilensky writes, is invited to present a song at the Sopot, 1962. You remember that? Yeah. What did they do? Okay. He writes this song, Autumn Stuff, and this is performed here in Poland at the Gdansk shipyards. You can see the record. This is in the second edition of the Sopot Festival, which was initiated and produced, Janusz, by your predecessor, Bratislav Spielman. Who is Spielman? The pianist. The pianist of the film. He was the initiator of Sopot with Szymon Żarecki. So this is all a Jewish business, okay? No matter what, 1962, Poland is communist, etc. But the Polish artist management are Jews. And it's incredible that we have a quintessential Israeli song sung by Esther Ofarim. The song is called Autumn, and he gets the second prize for the song, second prize, but he gets the first prize for orchestration. So number one in orchestration. The song, from the point of view of literature, is not something very, should I say, sophisticated, but it speaks about the atmosphere of autumn. Autumn is coming, the birds are already flying away to better places, winter is coming, the ships go to faraway lands, everything is becoming gloomier, etc. And here we have a clip from Gdansk. It's 50 seconds, which they play here, and they put the voice over. It has no voice, so you can actually see... Pay attention to the orchestration, number one. The birds. Blues. Okay, blues.
Bare no shrim he alim bisterot veganim kvaroch במרום שיירות עננים וכוכב אחרון שם נחבל מילה סתיו, סתיו, סתיו בר יצאו
Esther Ofarim is one of the most beautiful voices Israel ever had. The song is superb, and it shows you why Israel keeps winning Eurovision too. These people know how to write a good song for a festival. The arrangement doesn't fall in its quality from any of the greatest arrangers, from Frank Sinatra and other composers. So it's an amazing production. And I was so touched that I found that Esther Ofarim, this is from her website, she lives in Germany today, that she put this clip of 50 seconds from Poland Gdansk 1962. I thought, Janusz, that this will be the greatest moment of this lecture. 30 years after he left Warsaw, he's back to Gdansk through his song. I think it's an amazing story. He composed also children's songs. I will just play one little song, which is interesting because we don't know where the song comes from exactly. Apparently it's a German song that was translated into Hebrew by Levin Kipnis, another one from the neighborhood. And 1939, composed for a children program. So he also wrote music for the grown-up theater, from the children theater, okay?
Eize sha'un ben ha'il asher el duna Baylum ve'gam balayil dofek tik-tak-tik-tak Tik-tak, tik-tak, tik-tak Dofek sha'un ben ha'il Baylum ve'gam balayil Tik-tak, tik-tak, tik-tak Tik-tak, tik-tak Tik-tak, tik-tak, tik-tak Meros migdal gavoha Sha'un gadol, hoy bon naris moach, ketzad dofek bekol. Tik tak, tik tak, tik tak, dofek sha'un ben ha'il, bayom ve'gam balayil. Tik tak, tik tak, tik tak.
Shoshana Damari, she also sings for him the children's song. They are together all the time. Okay, so she sings in many different styles on his behalf. So towards the end, one word about Vilensky becoming the boss of the Kol Israelis, the Radio Israel Recording Orchestra. The orchestra, in a way, he's the shaper of the Israeli soundtrack, because this is the only recording studio orchestra that every artist wants to record. And Vilensky is the boss. He decides who is going to record, what is going to record, when is going to record. So his political power in the establishment is very, very strong. He also makes most of the arrangements for any of the artists. And as I wrote, if he so wished, he could have succeeded on Broadway, on Hollywood, with no problems. But he was very Zionist. Here you have Vilensky conducting the radio orchestra, and just a little bit of a song. This is an orchestral version. He used to make orchestral versions of songs that have words, and sometimes the words are unnecessary. The song is better orchestral. Okay. Sorry.
Thank you.
sorry, I'm cutting, but I wish today we would have such quality of music in the radio. Okay, it's amazing quality, an amazing investment for Israel 1965 to maintain this quality of sound and this orchestra. They were all state employees. All these people got their salary from the state. So it's an amazing achievement. So the wide recognition that Moshe received 1983, he received the Israel Prize, which makes me very happy. In a good company for me. With Naomi Shemer. Naomi Shemer, Jerusalem of Gold, is here, okay? And with Chaim Hefer, one of the greatest writers of poetry for song of Israel, born in Sosnowiec, another Polish Jew. So you see how Poland is represented in Israeli culture and recognized by the state. Not many people get your... So that shows you another symbolic recognition. Some final remarks before the last song, because the Israelis here will say, okay, when is he going to play that song? Okay, so I'm going to play that song just to end. But Wilensky remained faithful to cosmopolitan music aesthetics, refusing to abide to any ideological trends of Hebrew or Israeli music. Yet, many of his songs are considered today as quintessential Israeli, even though they're, as a musicologist, I can see them in their cosmopolitan sphere. They are considered authentic Israeli music. His style evolved parallel to the evolution of popular music. He kept all the time being informed of what was going on in the big world. And his early professional music education in Warsaw, I am convinced, was instrumental in his becoming a major force in the history of Israeli popular music. The most famous song, as you were all expecting, Kalaniot, Anemones, that's the way you say in English. I even don't know how you say this word in English. Kalaniot, these beautiful flowers. It was composed for another musical theater in 1945. And it was commissioned by the owner of the theater, a very famous producer. For the 1945 program, when the program was about to be launched, one day before he realized he's missing one song. So he brought this text to Moshe and says, Moshe, can you write the song today? Okay, like... My professor of film music in Hollywood used to say, don't write good music, write it for Monday. Okay? So, and Shoshana, when she got the song, you know, imagine the program is coming up tomorrow to the stage. She has to learn the song, and she doesn't like the song. She doesn't want to sing the song. Eventually, she abides. She is forced to sing the song, so to speak. She goes in the stage, sings the song, and on that moment, the song becomes one of the best-known Israeli songs. She has to sing it four times, to repeat it four times. Here you have, of course, the text by Nathan Alterman. It's in the same theater. It's a love song, okay? It's like a... How should I say? Scene of nature. She's picking flowers. She rushes out, calling her, look what I bought for you in your basket. Very not specific, this song. It's just atmospheric. But when she sings that, okay, the song becomes something else. So I'm going to play this for you. This is my last slide before the last one. In 1982, celebrating 50 years of musical activities in Israel from 32 to 82, all the artists of Israel did a tribute to Moshe Wilensky at a big concert, both in Tel Aviv and in Jerusalem. And thanks God, a year ago, someone put the program in YouTube. So I have it now and I can show it to you. And the record was published long play of this program. So I will play you this, and then you can see a little bit of Moshe in action. Where do I have it? I wrote it down. No. I put it up, but it disappeared. Yeah. Okay. This is the opening with the Jerusalem Symphony Orchestra playing, okay? So I will jump to the very end, because of course, like I left this song for the end, they left the song for the end with her singing, with Shoshana Damari singing. The conductor here, his name is Shimon Cohen, and he's the successor of Vilensky. He studied with him, so there is a school, okay, that is very interesting too. So here is the great diva. She wasn't very young already then, but she always had this majestic stage presence. Okay?
חולמת לראות עיניי הגיא נער הקטנה יורדת ובאש קטניות עולות הגיא את הפרחים נצרור ייתן לקט לה ובשלילים המתכסים בתר אמא היא נחלת שקיעות בהר כיוון אבדת אחנה אבל קלניות תמיד תברחנה סופות לרוב תהום נבט עלה אבל קלניות תמיד תברחנה קלניות שנים עברו שוב השקיעה יוקדת הנערה כבר סבתא ידידה ואתם אז זוהרות עיניה, והיא זוכרת שיר מזמור לשכה. כן הדורות באים חולפים לי גבר, אך לכל דור יש כאן לנתבע זבר. אשרי האיש לו בן סופות מרע, פרחה כאן לנתלו
שושנה דמארי, ועכשיו הגיעה העת להזמין אל הבמה להצטרף אלינו.
So he calls Vilensky to come to the scene after the song is sung. By the way, there is a lot to say about this song. It's also about the passing of generations. It can be read also against the background of the Holocaust, but I won't go now into this analysis. It will take too much time, but it's a profound song in a sense. And it's also a song that has certain, or had at the time, certain political connotations within the British mandate in Israel. Kalaniot was the code word that the Jewish insurgents called the British paratroopers who had red hats, okay? So, never mind. You will see Moshe coming, it's just take a few seconds. He was a very funny man. First of all, he was very dry. He didn't talk very well Hebrew. He had this heavy Polish accent. If you knew Polish, you can understand what he's talking. This dry sense of humor, very few words. So he's called to say a few things of thank you. So always he does, he brings this book of his new songs to give that to her. It's amazing, but this is real how he was. So a few seconds.
Moshe Vilensky.
כתודה לשושנה אני מגיש לה את ספרי האחרון זר קלניות. יש פה שירים שהיא מכירה, יש גם חדשים, הלווי פסנתר. שוש, זה שלך.
תודה רבה. זה לא האחרון.
That's the most absurd situation for such a magnificent evening, you know, to say thank you to the producers, thank you for the artists. And that was the man he was. Amazing. For me, it was amazing to get to know him a little bit personally, even in his very last days. So, my friends, you were a wonderful audience. And thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. We have, do you allow them comments and questions, or once again you're going to tell them not? Yes. Yes. I have to stand. I cannot sit anymore. This is too hard for me.
Oh. Well, thank you so much. I do have a question, but I'm just going to take it on myself, excuse me, just to say probably in the spirit of everyone here, this has just been such a wonderful series. Thank you so,
thank you.
So very much.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you. So, my friends, questions.
Oh, so the question was about Shoshana Damari, and so she was born and raised in Israel, or
yeah, absolutely,
and educated in Israel, obviously.
Absolutely.
So she had, and I'm guessing, but she has a sort of a Yemenite accent in her Hebrew.
Absolutely, heavy. She even emphasized, I think, overemphasized that accent. It was her trademark.
That's what I was going to ask. So she might not have even spoken quite that strongly, but so for example, in the first song you played, that was exaggerated to make
a little
it more
bit.
Ethnic.
Yes, okay. A little bit ethnicized. I think she was born in Yemen, but she came as a very very young 3-4 year old. So basically, she was educated in Israel, and. I want to tell you, I tried to meet her for my project on Israeli music, and she only talked to me on the phone. She didn't want me to see her as an old woman. So that's the story. I only interview her on the phone. I think she was right, you know, in a way, when you have this memory of this presence. Okay, it was. I respected that, of course, that decision. And she also had this low alt voice, you know, that this has such an incredible presence. So the guttural letters are even stronger in this voice, I think. The singers may correct me, but it's even more emphasized with that type of voice. Yeah.
So thank you so much. It's amazing. Three amazing lectures. So my question is also connected to Shoshana Damari, because it's actually the popular culture, the mainstream in Israel up to a certain point was absolutely Ashkenazi.
Yeah.
And if you see a singer like Shoshana Damari, you understand that she comes with this huge, amazing luggage of her ethnic, amazing music, which she never actually. As long as I know, maybe in very last years of her life, she got
some.
She did some performance.
She did.
So this is my question. So this, on the one hand, this amazing performer of his songs. On the other hand, her musical identity was kind of pushed.
Pushed
on the side.
That's a very good question, and certainly, to answer that, you also have to see her in the framework of an entire. Group of Yemenite popular singers of the time. Esther Gamlielit, Hannah Aroni, of course Bracha Tzfira, who was older than what they were, and each of them had a different approach to their Yemenite heritage. So it's true that Shoshana Damari is the one who recorded the least Yemenite songs, but she even has one song where she sings solo a cappella, only one, like in the Yemenite tradition itself. That she knew how to do that, I'm sure she knew. But it's true what you're saying, that she consolidated herself with this persona of the singer, mostly of Bilensky, but of course she sang songs by other composers, and she protected herself, even though sometimes in her dress she appeared with Yemenites and with jewelry, etc. So she negotiated this identity. Listen, if you take Ofra Haza, which is the generation after, okay? So Ofra also started as almost as a rocker, okay? And little by little, she went back to the Yemenite roots. So it's a very complex dialogue with the past. and also with the artistic world, okay? Every artist, you know very well, wants to succeed. So it's an issue of strategy, which strategy you use, how much you present yourself as ethnic or as cosmopolitan, how you exploit your possibilities, and that's what happened with each singer. By the way, there is a beautiful book by Dan Almagor about all the Yemenite Jewish singers of Israel. It's a very nice, you know, Dan knows a lot of the anecdotes of all these people. It's not very analytical, but it has a lot of information. I think it's called Bat Teiman, I think. This, the daughter of Yemen, Dan Almagor, yeah. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I grew up with this music, and yeah. I thought I overcame it. You came here and showed me I haven't, so thank you very much.
Yeah, yeah.
Professor, I'd like to ask you one theoretical question.
Yes.
Now, could you, in a few words, if possible, draw a line between Mr. Moshe Wileński and Henryk Wars and Jerzy Petersburski, other Polish composers of Jewish descent?
Which were the names that you mentioned?
Jerzy Petersburski,
yeah,
and Henryk Wars.
Remember Jerzy Petersburski, the beautiful
I suppose there are some similarities in the apparatus, the composer and arrangement apparatus.
Thank you for the question. It's a very important question. First of all, as we saw from the Spoto Festival, many Jewish musicians stayed here in Poland and had careers here. I accept, if your question was a little bit of criticism, I accept the criticism. I think that we did not understood enough Israeli music in the background of what was going on in Europe, parallel to it. And I think we need to pursue that. I could tell you, with no doubts, that if Kalaniot had Polish words, it could be the song number one of Poland. So the issue here is the musical language, the semiotics of the musical language. And that's a very tricky issue. What represents what? What music tells us about identity, about nationality, about ethnicity, about religion? So it's a very important question. And it's not that I don't want to answer you. I just want to tell you that when you get into this cosmopolitan musical language, the issue of nationalism becomes a little bit difficult to tackle. So therefore, I think that we need to learn more. I would like to know much more about the musical life in Warsaw in the 1920s, because that's where he comes from. Okay, I know tangos were very strong. I know there was foxtrot and there was other stuff. And I sometimes can hear now online recordings from Poland from the 1920s. So we need to work more on that. Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. Thank you. Important question. Yeah, thank you. My friends, enjoy the rest of the festival. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Edwin. Thank you.